Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It is Jamie Dodd. It is my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Strands, who also covers the team for The Athletic, here in studio, back with the walking boot, playing through it like Chris Tanev in the playoffs. He's here in person after a hiatus. Canucks Talk brought to you.
No one call me a warrior.
No, not quite as much physical determination required to do what we do, but you made it here.
Literally zero.
It's literally zero. And that's why I love it. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And Stanley Cup Final, Game 7 tonight, Drancer. This is the final game of the NHL season is tonight. Finally, it is tonight. And look, this is Canucks Talk. Obviously, we'll get into Canucks stuff, but I can't remember another NHL game that feels like this one. This is the most hyped, most intriguing, biggest NHL game I can remember in my time as a fan of the league, of the sport.
By a mile.
Yeah.
I mean, dominated First Take. You had Gary Bettman. Mm-hmm. You had Biz Nasty. You had PK Subban on First Take. You had Stephen A. Smith spending the whole time talking hockey and celebrating it. I mean, wild stuff. This is a game that translates, and it's because superstars matter in terms of selling the game. McDavid's a superstar at the absolute apex of his powers, and storylines and drama, right? Sell games, sell leagues, and coming back from 3-0 is wild. Like, it's unbelievable. Everyone wants to talk about it. Everyone wants to watch it. The ratings are going to be massive in both this country and in the United States. I mean, this is what it's all about. And you know, there's sort of an angle here where if McDavid can get this done, I do think he joins the sort of like pantheon of superstars within the North American sports landscape that I would say no hockey player has occupied in. I mean, I think you have to go back pretty far. Like, I would say I don't know that Ovi Sid got to that level.
Mm.
You know, but like, they'd have been closest.
The closest would be, I would say, even Ovechkin more than Crosby. And if we're talking like the U.S. side of things. Yeah,
I think like that, like 08-09 window when they had the dueling hat tricks, you know, and then Crosby won the golden goal game and Americans were really into that rivalry in 2010, 2014 in Sochi. Like, I think Crosby, Ovechkin got close. But I would say break through at a different level. Like, I think you'd have to go back to the mid-90s. I think you're talking about Messier's Rangers. Like, I think you're talking about Steve Yzerman in Detroit. Like, mm-hmm. I think you're talking about that level of wider celebrity that would be attainable for McDavid if he's able to finish this off tonight along with the Oilers. And here's the other thing. Make no mistake, it will be McDavid who finishes this off if they get it done, right? I mean, both of these teams have shoddy goaltending, okay? That was always true, despite the... Do you remember when we were doing those shows and I was, like, getting mad at our guests about the Bobrovsky stuff?
I sure do.
I was getting so annoyed. It's just, like, sometimes we credit a goaltender when another team's finishing is off, and that was what was happening with Edmonton and Florida. It was so obvious to me, and I was so frustrated about it, especially because Bobrovsky has been below NHL average save percentage like most of his Florida tenure until they hired Paul Maurice and became the best defensive team in hockey. And I think you can draw a direct line from one thing to the other. And we've seen it as the Panthers have come unraveled in this series, largely because Edmonton shooters are capitalizing on everything simply by picking corners. There's nothing fancy here. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, if we pick a corner, he's going to have trouble. And time after time, we see it happening. So Edmonton, as they're wont to do, sort of effed around and found out, consistent with what they did at the start of the year against the Canucks in the second round, against the Dallas Stars. People, by the way, I think are sleeping on the extent to which Edmonton let Dallas put their back up against the wall, right? Because people will say, like, they trailed 2-1 to Dallas, as if it's they trailed 2-1 and by two goals early in game four.
Yep.
Right? Like, they were staring a 3-1 series deficit in the conference final dead in the eye before they Edmontoned continued to do this team's been like the ultimate Houdini team. I've never seen anything like it, I don't think, right? Like, they look dead. It's like at this point, Edmonton's like, ha ha, step right up. We are going to chain ourselves up, throw ourselves in a, you know, airtight, triple padlocked steel case and get dropped off a bridge. And then they just like emerge from the ice and everyone's like, ha ha, McDavid. Anyway, the fundamental dynamic in this series, and this is sort of fascinating to me as it pertains to tonight, is with McDavid on the ice, the Panthers have no answer, except when they also have Sasha Barkov on the ice. And when Sasha Barkov's on the ice, it's not that the Panthers have an advantage. In fact, they're still losing territorially. It's just that they're not getting blasted to smithereens the way Sam Bennett is whenever McDavid's on the ice against him, right? I mean, McDavid is eating Sam Bennett's lunch in front of him and his parents, right? Every time they're on the ice together. So that dynamic, I think, it really helps. That dynamic, I think, has shaped the series because I don't think Edmonton was ever full value for their the way they were trailing 3-0. Panthers weren't full value for their 3-0 lead. In particular, I thought they were wildly lucky in game three. Most people will say game one, but I don't really buy that because I thought Barkov and Forsling did a really good job against McDavid in that game, and they spent 80% of their ice time against him. But game three, I thought the Panthers were wildly lucky. The opportunistic capitalizing off like a couple consecutive Oilers mistakes just as Edmonton seemed to be putting the boot in. I think that lead was soft. But I also think Florida was deeply unlucky to lose game five at home. For me, this series, like, both teams have scored two clear victories over the other. There have been two goals decided by or two games decided by a goal, one of which the Oilers added an empty netter, but you know I don't count those. And fundamentally, the team on home ice has had the edge. Like, the team on home ice, more than anything else in this series, the team on home ice has, in my opinion, been the better team or the deserving team literally every game of the series to this point. And now I wake up and I see that the Oilers and the Panthers are both priced at minus 110. It's a pick 'em game seven. I think the Panthers are underpriced. I think the Panthers are underpriced there. You can still get the under if you hurry at 5.5. Parlay those together. Nice little tasty plus 215. That would probably be my play. But I don't think anyone should ignore the two shapes that game sevens take, right? We've talked about this many times. You get the low scoring nervy affair, or you get the one team that's truly broken the other. I don't think the Panthers have been broken by the Edmonton Oilers. I'm not so sure Bobrovsky hasn't.
And the question is, it's not physically broken, right? It's if they're psychologically broken by the trauma already of having been up 3-0 and now being at the brink like this.
Especially for a goalie where the mental edge, that confidence is like really hard to manufacture if you lose it. And especially if you can't cover the top of the net. Like, especially if the Oilers are going to beat you on that level of shots high. Now, every goalie gets beat high, right? Like, you want to sound smart talking about any goaltender, say, oh, he can get beat on his glove hand
like, high.
So can everybody.
Yeah, that's where a lot of goals are scored.
That's
where there's less body in front of the puck.
There's a reason the best shooters shoot there, you know? But I
love that there would be one goalie that's like, shoot at his torso. That's his weak spot. don't go glove hand high. Just shoot right at the crest. He struggles with those.
Yeah, So I like Florida for value on the money line. I like the under, but the Bobrovsky factor makes me deeply nervous. And so, you know, honestly, if I bet hockey, and everyone knows I don't, if I bet hockey, the way I'd be playing it tonight is I would bet both the under and Florida teased and the over and Edmonton teased, because I get 1 at 2 to 1, 1 at 3 to 1. I'd throw an equal amount of money on each, because I just fundamentally believe that there's a correlation. If this game is like a classic nervy game seven, I think the Panthers are winning it. If this game is the Edmonton Oilers are going to crush Bobrovsky, then I know that they're going to crush Bobrovsky and then also let the Panthers back in it, because they're
that's
the Edmonton Oilers.
Yep.
And then the over is going to play with these. So that would be how I'd bet this game. That's my sense of what to expect tonight. And oh boy, am I excited.
Yeah, I have a hard time making much of a guess at this one, because to me, the fundamental question is...
Well, I just hedge. Why don't you try and have it both ways?
Just hedge. But the fundamental question is, what is the Panthers' mental state, right? And that's unknowable. Like, we have no idea. They might not know. They might not truly know until they're on the ice and actually playing the game, like, how ready they are mentally to play this game. But that, to me, that's the big question. If they are able to treat it like another playoff game, to kind of erase, you know, not think about, oh my goodness, if we lose, we're going to be the biggest chokers in NHL history, right? Not think about all of that, but just are actually able to eliminate that from their minds and realize we have a chance to go win game seven on home ice to win the Stanley Cup, I think they have a really good shot at winning. But I think that's also very, very difficult for them to do. You were talking about, you know, the whole idea of the crossover potential for this and just what a star-making turn this could be for Connor McDavid, how big it could be for the NHL, right? And, you know, I think it was last week we had Greg Wyshynski on the show, and I was joking about, like, First Take questions, asking about Connor McDavid's legacy. That's actually what they were talking about on First Take today. They had PK Subban on, Stephen A. Smith and Shannon Sharp, and that's what they were talking about. Like, it is the lead story in sports media across North America today. That's a big deal. Now, I will say, like, legacy, often one of those kind of, like, lazy sports media buzzwords, but this is truly, like, this is the type of game where it's worthwhile to talk about legacy and what it will mean for Connor McDavid, because this is a game that's going to define how we remember not just McDavid, but a lot of the other key participants, right? Like Sergei Bobrovsky. When his career is over, we're probably going to remember this game, whatever happens in it, first and foremost, when he retires.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be a Hall of Famer anyway because of his body of work.
It's still going to be, this game is going to be, I'm not saying it's going to kick him out of the Hall of Fame if he loses, but, like, this is what you'll remember. You'll remember the outcome of tonight's game more than anything else. Paul Maurice.
Oh, Paul Maurice for sure.
You're going to remember the outcome of this game. And I think Connor McDavid's the obvious one, and I never like the, like, style points debates about championships, right? Like, oh, well, that guy was injured, so was it really that impressive? It's like, well, you won the title, so that's really impressive.
Well, Demko was injured.
Sure. But when we're
entire city yells at their radio, yeah, he was.
But once you get into, like, where does this guy rank in the top five? Then I start to take into consideration style points.
Degree of difficulty?
Yes, degree of difficulty, like, coolness factor, all of that, right?
But but it's done so inconsistently because once you start to, like, for example, LeBron James's championship against the KD, Steph, Draymond.
Well, they didn't have KD.
Oh, right, sorry. But against the 72 and 10. 73 and 9 Warriors is the most impressive championship victory. Like, Jordan never beat a team like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not even close. Not even close. But no one ever says that in LeBron's defense. Well,
Drance. But, like, Draymond was suspended for game 5. Iggy was hurt.
Well, Draymond should have pulled it together and not got suspended then.
Is it not on the player himself for the decisions he made?
LeBron walked over him. As a man, like, if you're
number one LeBron James hater, Ben Bazard,
LeBron walked over him, and that justified Draymond losing his mind?
Well, not, it's a natural thing to do.
You know what? Jordan Poole also got paid too much. Arvydas Sabonis has his face. Like, come on, what are you doing? Not Arvydas, but Domantas. Anyway.
Domantas?
Arvydas. Arvydas Sabonis also has his face. It's genetics. But point being, no one ever factors that in.
But they should. They should.
Okay.
Just like they should factor it in.
You disagreed with this.
You can be the biggest. You can be the biggest Oilers hater in the world, biggest Connor McDavid hater. There's no escaping the impressiveness of if they accomplish this, and it absolutely should be factored into, like, legacy conversations and historical debates about his place in the game. Just like it should be for LeBron.
So the problem also that I have with this, okay, is, like, Wayne Gretzky could score 50 goals without lifting the puck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, here's the truth of the matter. Connor McDavid is already the best hockey player who's ever played the sport.
We can agree on something.
Like, that's just true. Tonight, actually, in some ways, the style points part of it, if you're factoring that in sufficiently and being like, man, you know, a lot of NHL players would smoke at intermission and they were on average significantly lighter and there was no salary cap and there were 18 teams and 16 of those 18 still made the playoffs, and on and on down the list, right? The butterfly wasn't invented.
There were few European players. Yeah. And, yeah.
Goaltenders were, the average height of a goaltender was 5'8". You know, like, no one had to lift the puck to score. I mean, they were showing on Sportsnet, the Bruins-Oilers game one from 1988, just as we were coming in, and some of the goals, it's just like, that's not even a scoring chance now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just saying, if you take the, this is my problem with style points. If you take style points far enough down the rabbit hole, I actually think the only argument against McDavid already being the best player on the to ever play the game is like boomer nonsense. So that's why I struggle.
But the greatest of all time debate always comes down to two different things, right? Because I think you're right. Yeah. Like, obviously, if you had a time machine and dropped 2024 Connor McDavid into
his, like, commitment
the 1980s
and, like, yeah, and, like, teetotaling,
the training he's had and all yeah. that, it's like, it's off. There's no debate.
The medical science behind his knee repair, yeah. right? Because that's the other thing. I mean, one argument against it is also, like, what would those guys look like with today's medical care?
Yeah. So, to me, the only truly fair way to have the conversation is greatness relative to their peers.
Sure.
And that's where it starts. That's where the style points start to matter, right? Because yep. you can say, well, it's his first Stanley Cup, and, you know, look at how many Gretzky had. Lemieux won a couple. You know, Sidney Crosby's won three. I think it's also fair to point out the more difficult path to the Cup now with more teams and all of that that Connor McDavid has. But, oh. like, this is where the historic accomplishment of potentially coming back from three games down in the Stanley Cup final really matters. It elevates it a lot.
I actually completely agree with your point. I don't know why I squirreled it for so long to argue with Ben about Draymond Green's personal responsibility. Look, end of the day, you're right. Like, if McDavid pulls this off, I think it's probably the coolest individual season we've ever seen from an NHL player. But he needs to win tonight for that to be true.
Yep. And that's the other part of this is, look, I know I get why Edmonton fans were so hyped on Friday. Obviously, like, that's the final home game of the season. You win. You're on the verge of this incredible comeback. We all know the downside here is greater for the Panthers and the Panthers players and the Panthers
Especially because they were there last year, on and on.
But don't discount the downside for the Oilers in tonight either.
Well, so I agree with you, except so the Oilers, the only goaltender that the Oilers have faced that has maintained a 900 or better save percentage against them, you know, over like a certain amount of games played, is Jake Oettinger, 907, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about this a lot, but I want to reiterate it. We now live in a world where the Oilers have shot 10%+ across this playoff run, and no one thinks it's lucky. Everyone thinks that's Connor McDavid, and they're right, right? Like, we now live in this weird evolutionary stage of the game where suddenly, as the Oilers have very much proven, we're not going into Game 7 being like, which third liner is going to be the hero? You know what I mean? Like, McDavid's mm-hmm. going to be the guy, or Tkachuk's going to be the guy, or Barkov's going to be the guy. You still might get a big, like, Adam Henrique goal or two or whatever, right? I mean, we saw it in Game 6. But in terms of who's setting the table, who's going to be responsible for the win, it's going to be Connor McDavid. And that kind of flips a lot of the way that we usually think about and talk about hockey kind of on its head. In particular, you know, I like to talk at this time of year about truth serum, okay? Well, a lot of things have been exposed about the Oilers over the course of this playoff run, right? Their second pair, it's real bad,
mm-hmm.
right? Their defensive depth, it ain't good enough. They needed to bring in Philip Broberg just to, like, have some talent and push on their back end. Edmonton's depth, kind of given a lot of what McDavid generates back all series long. Their goaltending, probably not good enough. And in various moments of various games, we've seen all of that come to bear. With a couple exceptions, like, their penalty kill has been a legitimate strength, right? And, you know, they actually do have
a strength, like, a phenomenal
nuke. yeah. And I do think they have, like, a good amount of speed and size up front so that they have options, right? So there have been, but I actually think a lot of, like, the truth of the Oilers has come to bear, has been expressed in various stages of this playoffs. Like, I think the Canucks showed, you know, how much Edmonton can struggle to break the puck out without their top pair on the ice. I think Dallas showed how Edmonton's depth can hold them back in the early parts of the, and then it hasn't mattered because Connor McDavid has gone, you know, NBA style, like the GOAT LeBron James. Sorry, I'm just triggering Ben. has gone and had himself an NBA style hero ball playoff run.
Yep.
Right. And yet, on the eve of this game seven, it's like the Oilers don't have home ice because they effed around and found out early in the season they weren't consistently great all year long. With Barkov and Forsling likely to spend 80%+ of their 5-on-5 ice time against McDavid, like, McDavid still can make the difference because he's Connor McDavid, but it's going to be harder. He's going to have to climb uphill tonight. That's still an edge for the Panthers. All of the small edges that Edmonton has survived because of their best player and may survive still tonight, like, still could come to bear, still could shape the outcome tonight. And I think there's still like a lesson in that. Like, yeah, there's downside to Edmonton losing. But while you've got McDavid and Dreisaitl, while they're playing like this, even if they're, you know, beginning to leave their statistical primes, I think you still have 3-4 years of runway.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no.
To get it right around.
I'm not saying it's over, but it's just in terms of just like the emotional impact of a loss. Oh, like, don't discount how crushing it would be from an Edmonton perspective.
For sure. But by fighting back the way that they have in this series, it's like, you know, you're onto something. No matter what, you know, like you know what these guys can do. You know, that they probably haven't played. They probably haven't been healthy in months and they're doing this right. They don't have enough depth. They don't have a good enough defense core. And some of the things that you need to fix are like upgrade Cody Ceci. And, you know, like it's stuff you can do.
Stuff you can do. Yeah.
It's stuff you can actually do, especially because players are going to want to play there. So I do think that the pressure is on Florida. I do think a loss is going to be far more devastating for them if it happens. And I think the McDavid story coming out of this from a individual perspective, you know, the Pantheon stuff, the Pantheon conversation, I think should be front of mind. But I also think there's an additional takeaway for fans of other teams, for Canucks fans, for people just sort of tracking how the game evolves, which is that if shooters continue to sort of enjoy this type of edge over goaltenders for the first time in 25 years, if the pendulum is truly in the process of swinging back this way, we might get out of that world where we go into game sevens and we expect Ruslan Fedotenko to
you
be the hero.
You expect the random goal off somebody's knee to win it.
It's going to come down to deflections. It's still hockey. It's always going to be a hugely variable game. But in this world, with the game being played this way, you know, some of that roster construction stuff that we've been so absolutist about, the idea that you have to absolutely make sure that every coin flip is weighted marginally in your favor, like, to some extent, it's going to be the best, most talented players who actually decisively shape outcomes going forward. And not only do I think that's more fun for fans, I just think that's good for the game.
The last thing I'll say about this game is my main rooting interest is for overtime. Has not happened since 1954, Stanley Cup Final, Game 7 overtime, and it just feels like this Oilers season has been so chaotic that that's the only fitting end to the season. The fitting punctuation mark at the end of this season would be overtime, one way or another. Let's hope we get some tonight. Game 7 between the Oilers and Panthers. To continue to set it up, we will be joined by one of our favorites, Ryan Clark from ESPN, coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It is Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at dunbarlumber.com. ESPN's Ryan Clark is going to join us momentarily here, and in fact, we have him on the line. He covers the NHL for ESPN, one of our favorites. He is Ryan Clark. Ryan, thanks for doing this today. How are you?
Of course. Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We are hyped for this big, big game seven. We were talking about it in the first segment. Is this the biggest game you can remember in, I don't know, the last 30 years of the NHL? It feels like it has that sort of weight behind it right now.
It does, because it's interesting. One of the points I saw online this morning was someone saying, could you argue that Canucks-Rangers was a bigger deal? Because with the Rangers, you're trying to end a 50-year curse, and this is where it gets interesting. In that time, we've seen the Rangers win the Stanley Cup. We've seen teams end long losing streaks or droughts or curses in different sports. We've seen it with the Boston Red Sox. We, of course, saw it with other teams as well, like all the Philadelphia teams, because for the longest time, there was the curse of William Penn, that whenever they built skyscrapers taller than the statue of William Penn, those teams never won, and they've since won. Whereas if with this, you're looking at what's either going to be considered the greatest comeback maybe in the history of North American professional sports, or the greatest collapse, depending upon the perspective. You're looking at a team that hasn't won a Stanley Cup since 1990, not only win it in dramatic fashion, but win it with the best generational talent of his time, along with another generational talent, Leon Draisaitl. If you're the Florida Panthers and you win it, it's not like you come back from this, but it's another conversation that, look, the Sun Belt is nothing to mess with. We've seen Tampa win a Stanley Cup. We've seen Carolina, L.A., Anaheim, Dallas has done it. And these are all teams that, again, with the exception of Anaheim, realistically next year could make the playoffs and possibly win it all. And so there's a lot of different things at stake. There's McDavid's legacy. There's Draisaitl's legacy. How much does winning or losing tonight play a role in what happens with Draisaitl's future? With Sergei Bobrovsky, it's the same thing. Like, he wins tonight, where does he rank in the all-time discussion among greatest Russian goaltenders? Like, he's already there, but how much does the Cup change that calculus? Because if he wins tonight, he has two Vezinas, one Cup. Whereas if you look at Andrei Vasilevsky, two Cups, one Vezina, so it's an interesting discussion. So there's a lot going on.
Ryan, the collapse versus comeback of it all. How will you see it, or how do you see it going into Game 7? Collapse or comeback?
Maybe comeback in some ways, just because that's been the narrative of the Oilers season, hasn't it? 2-9-1 start, people wondering, will they have enough runway to get back into it? Because that barometer has usually been American Thanksgiving. Not only do they get back into it, but they've been the best team in the NHL since hiring Chris Knobloch. Then even when you look at the playoffs from the second round on, there were moments against the Canucks when you kind of wondered, like, okay, maybe they don't win this. Then they do. There was a moment after Game 3 against the Dallas Stars in the conference final when you wonder, maybe this is the end of the line for the Oilers. It wasn't. And then after you go down 3-0 in the Cup final, then it was definitely like, yeah, they're done. And now we're looking at Game 7. So it seems like that's sort of been it, but at the same time, it is hard to ignore the collapse aspect of it, because we think about what the Panthers were at various points in the regular season. There are moments in the regular season, no one looked like they could lay a glove on the Panthers. They were just that much better than everyone. And even with the road they've taken to get to the postseason, they've made a point of not only shutting down teams, but shutting down team stars. And it's what you saw in the first three games, but to see them just not have an answer. It's not like they're losing one-goal games. Like, they're giving up goals in bunches. They're struggling to score. It's a complete collapse, not only just in terms of the scoreline, but all the principles that have seen them even get to the point of being up 3-0 in a series.
You know, you talk about that word legacy, right? And we were talking about it as well earlier in the show. And I think number one on that list in terms of like a legacy defining game tonight is obviously Connor McDavid. He's going to win the Conn Smythe. He has a chance to author this incredible individual season and finish authoring this incredible individual season. On the Florida side, you mentioned Bobrovsky, but is the individual with the most kind of at stake tonight on the Florida side? Could it be Paul Maurice, the head coach, as he tries to finally get over the hump and win his first Stanley Cup?
It seems like he's among them, because with what Paul Maurice has done is in his career, it's that natural inclination of at some point win. And this looks like it's one of his best, maybe his best chance to make that happen. But if it doesn't happen, then how do you sort of move forward beyond that? Because again, we've seen teams lose Stanley Cups. They've lost them before, and last year they lost, but at least with last season, with the Panthers, by the time they got to the Cup final, it became evident they just didn't have the depth. Physically, they had gone through a lot. Injury-wise, they had players dealing with several things. It's not saying that there were excuses, but it is to say that you could understand the circumstances while also playing against an extremely good Golden Knights team that it could have challenged with any other previous Cup winner. This season, from start to finish, there was no secrets about what they were. At their peak, they were arguably the best team in the NHL. They have had this level of consistency others just simply haven't had. And to be up 3-0 and not only lose potentially 4 straight games, but lose them in a way to which your identity is non-existent, you're talking about consecutive Cup losses in just completely opposite ways, which then makes you ask, so how do you get yourself up for a third season? Maybe you think because you've seen it all, it prepares you to win a Cup. But as we've all seen, just because you've been there once doesn't mean there's any guarantees you're going to get back there.
With the stakes for Florida, right? How will we remember, what will we remember about this Stanley Cup final? Obviously, a lot will hinge on how it plays out tonight. But what will we remember about why things got away from them, do you think, if they ultimately do cough this one up tonight?
It seems like the thing to remember was, even if they try a plan B, a plan C, or a plan D, it just didn't work. And it's a contrast to what you saw with Edmonton. Edmonton came up with a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, and not only did it work, but it worked in ways that just unlocked different facets of what Edmonton does. We've talked about secondary and tertiary scoring, and you've seen them have games such as Game 6, in which, never mind Connor McDavid not getting a goal or a point, he didn't even get a shot on goal, and they still were able to put up 5 goals, even if 2 of them were empty netters. But the point being is they were in position to even put in 2 empty net goals, which is saying a lot. Whereas with the Panthers, it just seems like every time they've tried to come up with some sort of, let's say, counter, it just falls flat for whatever reason. And it seems like that might be the thing to remember if this team ends up losing. If they end up winning, it's going to be that question of, okay, so what changed in Game 7 that they couldn't exactly harness in Games 4 through 6? That's going to be it. But if they lose this in terms of just what it means in a vacuum, it would be that. But in terms of what it means big picture, we didn't ask that, so sorry for jumping into the gun of it. But in terms of what it could mean for them big picture, it's difficult because this is the best it's ever been in that franchise's history. And Thomas, you know this, you were down there for the longest time. And if Adlin Biedenbach, who runs PR for the Panthers, were here, she'd probably slap me for saying this. But Thomas knows the running joke on sports radio for many years was, and always 3 points out of a playoff spot, is the Florida Panthers. And they've done a lot to change that narrative. But to lose like this, if it does happen, it's kind of like, well, how do you look at this era? It's the best it's ever been, but it still wasn't good enough. And that changes if they win tonight or if they win next year in the coming years. But if they don't, it's a fascinating way to look at a period of success.
Well, and I think, let's say the Panthers do lose tonight, right? I think of the two most recent, or big historic crushing collapses, and one would be Tampa Bay in the first round against Columbus, right? And of course, the next year they come back and win the Stanley Cup. The other one would be the University of Virginia basketball becoming the first number one seed in the March Madness tournament to lose to a 16 seed. They go on to win the title the next year as well. So you could put that spin on it if you're Florida, right? Look, teams have come back from these types of crushing losses. The problem is, this is their second time in the Stanley Cup final, right? This is supposed to be their comeback from a really difficult loss. If you're trying to build that, oh, hey, we'll bounce back from this, it's like, what, you're going to go to this Cup final for a third year in a row? It just seems so difficult when it felt like everything was aligning for them this year. It feels like it's going to be so difficult to bounce back from this as a franchise.
Okay, but see, this is where it gets different between them and the Tampa Bay Lightning. So even though the Tampa Bay Lightning still had cap considerations to go through, they still had a core, and the Lightning were still early enough in the stage of what they are to where there was flexibility for them to make moves. They weren't at that point where they were starting to lose the guys like Andre Palat and Yanni Gourde. Like the clock was ticking, as we saw with the expansion draft and just other financial considerations, but they still had the bulk of people there and they could go out and make those trades. You look at the Florida Panthers and their current setup right now, the big one, of course, is what will happen with a lot of their UFAs. What's going to happen with Sam Reinhart? What's going to happen with Tarasenko? Those have been important players. What's going to happen with part of their back line with someone like Brandon Montour? Like, those are three pretty big questions to sit there and consider, and that's the hard part is the Panthers are going to have, what, a little bit more than $20 million in cap space to get things handled. And so when you're looking at a UFA class of what, 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, it raises a lot of questions of how are you going to make that sort of happen. And so, well, yes, there's been a precedent for crushing losses. The difference is this with the Lightning. Yes, they lost, but they lost in the first round. But again, they still had the bulk of everyone coming back. It could still make those adjustments to where they were able to then go on a run where they won 2 straight cups. With UVA basketball, and apologies because don't remember exactly all the allotment that UVA had the year they lost to UMBC, but Virginia had enough players coming back, and they had one of the top 25 recruiting classes that season, and they also had a structure in place, and plus the ACC, what they went through, they were just a much sharper, different squad than they were when they lost that first-round game. The Panthers, you're talking about not just one cup final you've lost, the 2 cup finals you've lost in extremely different circumstances, that while you've had a general manager in a front office under Bill Zito that's been able to quickly adjust to their surroundings, and that's sort of been part of their success, how much is too much with this offseason while trying to get back to a cup final for a third straight year if you lose one after being up 3-0? Again, something we have not seen since 1947. And real quick, was having this conversation with someone the other day. We've all talked about sort of the window that's existed from the end of Game 7 to the draft to free agency, which if you're the Panthers and you lose this, do you really want to be at the draft at that point? You probably just want to go straight to free agency, get who you need to get, and be done. Because, like, again, like you're talking about something that just, how long does it stick with them? And again, I realize what radio station I'm saying this on, so I apologize, but people there still talk about 2011.
Oh yeah.
So you don't think they're going to talk about this if they lose tonight? It's going to be talked about. And again, unfortunately for them, if they lose, for all the work that they've done to get to this point, this is what people are going to remember, unless they win it next year.
So here's the goal differential, okay, of the 3 Edmonton Oilers centermen. McDavid +5, Dreisaitl -1, and Ryan McLeod -2, and then let's go Derek Ryan as the fill-in -3. Here it is for Florida: Barkov +2, Bennett -3, and then you've got Stenlin -2 and Lundell +1. A couple things that stand out to me there. One, Barkov might not be getting scored on, and he might be doing a good job against McDavid, and I'm sure we're going to see a steady diet of that, but don't the Panthers kind of need more from their top end, given what Edmonton's getting from theirs?
It's getting more from the top end, but again, it's getting more from just really your entire cast of characters. Because that's the thing about Edmonton is, in the games when McDavid scored 4 points, they were still getting contributions from others. And even when he didn't score, and his Dreisaitl hasn't scored, but he's been able to get assists, they're getting contributions from others. Whereas if with Florida, it's you're trying to get more from Barkov, you're trying to get more from Tkachuk, you're trying to get more from Reinhart, you're trying to get more from everyone. But then when you look at your 3rd and 4th line, or even your 2nd and 3rd defensive pairings, you're trying to get more from them as well. And not only just get more in an offensive standpoint, but more from a defensive standpoint too, just because you think about the amount of goals that they've given up. In those first 3 games, the Panthers gave up, what was it, like 5 goals. Last 3 games, they've given up 11. The majority of them, outside of the empty netters, have been on rush chances, which, again, it's the Edmonton Oilers. Like, speed is sort of what they do. And so it's just, again, it's getting everything from more than just your top line from a defensive standpoint. It's getting contributions and getting consistency from everyone across the board. And that's just it. It's like everybody talks about trying to play a complete game. And that's something that just the Panthers just simply haven't done.
I know it's always a bit of a fool's errand to try to predict how a game seven is going to go, right? It just seems like they're always such a coin flip. In this one, and I know the betting markets reflect that it is a coin flip. I'm just so curious about the kind of state of mind of the Panthers, right? If they are able to flush the fact that they've, you know, given up a 3-0 lead and are here in this game seven and just focus on playing hockey, I'll think they'll have a really good chance to win, but it just seems like such a difficult task. Do you have kind of a gut feeling about the shape of this game, what we might see tonight in game seven?
Well, if in terms of what we could see, it's going to be who can establish themselves early. That doesn't necessarily mean who scores first, but who can be the most consistent early. And how do you sort of carry that throughout? Because, again, we've seen periods from both of these teams when they can limit each other to single digits and shots. They can limit each other in terms of just shot opportunities. They can limit each other in terms of time and space. But we've also seen moments in which no matter what team tries to do that, the other team is going to get goals. They're going to get shots. They're going to get time and space. So it really kind of seems like it's about who can have the more consistent first period, and then who can find a way to carry that into the second and carry that into the third. Because when we think a lot about what's sort of been the Panthers' downfall, there's been a lot of different things, but it's been the mistakes. That was something that killed Edmonton in the first three games, and then it seemed like Edmonton really started cutting down on those mistakes. So if you're the Panthers and you can cut down on those mistakes, you can consistently find a way to get shots. But more importantly, we saw this a lot throughout the first parts of game six. If you can find a way to get into those high danger spots, get to the net front, that's going to make a difference, because it seems like that was something they were struggling to do at times. So if they can do those things, either one of those teams can do those things, it seems like that's going to be a potential recipe for success. But then again, as much as we sit here and say this is what could happen, this cup final is shown for all we think we know absolutely nothing.
I'm going to pitch you on a theory, and I want you to buy or sell this theory. You ready?
Go for it.
If the Edmonton Oilers win, it's better for the game because Connor McDavid enters a stratosphere of public recognition that no hockey player has been at since the mid-90s.
Thinking, maybe. The reason why it's so hard to say is because there's this understanding and recognition that he's the best player in the game. In terms of reaching a stratosphere, it seems like, yes, you would add cup winner to it and it would be big, but it's like, how much bigger could he actually get? Because we talk about the mid-90s, but let's look at the landscape of what sports was and what sport was in the mid-90s, which was, it was the NBA, the NHL, the NFL, Major League Baseball. Yes, you had college athletics, but while it was big, it was more regional. Whereas if now those still four leagues exist, but college football is a bigger deal. College basketball, men and women's, is a bigger deal. The WNBA has grown. Again, we're living in a time where not only are people watching the Premier League, but at some point, anyone who's on this call or is listening to this show has either watched the Copa America, which everybody watched Argentina, Canada living up there, because let's face it, 10 years ago, Canada soccer was not fun to watch. They're watching the Euros. They're watching the Premier League. They're watching F1. There are more options now than there were in the 90s. So to sit there and compare, it's hard, because like, even though he would win a cup, it's like Connor McDavid would have to do more than just win tonight to get into that stratosphere like we saw Gretzky and those guys in the 90s, because back then there were fewer options. Whereas if now, so you have to do something so unbelievably over the top to where his profile is going to grow beyond just what it already is, if that makes sense. So while the profile is going to be there, whether he wins or loses, in order for him to really like get into like a much, much, much higher place, like he's going to have to do something in addition to winning a Stanley Cup.
See, I just feel like if he wins the Stanley Cup with this comeback and the way that it's being talked about, and especially if he has a moment of any kind in the game tonight, like I feel like he's going to be in a speed stick commercial with Patrick Mahomes by the fall.
Possibly. But again, it's one of those where will the speed stick commercial be aired? Will it be in Canada or the United States? Because Thomas and I have talked about this.
Well, no one in Canada is doing a Mahomes commercial just for a Canadian audience, man.
Fair enough. But you and I have talked about this before when we were at The Athletic, where like it's the Brent Burns commercial, where Brent Burns is this pitch man for Kit Kat, and you're like, this is dope. But at the same time, you're like, does anyone in San Jose where he actually plays know this? And so, again, with McDavid, it's something that you could possibly see that maybe he's in that kind of commercial with a Mahomes or Travis Kelce or someone from another sport. But also, again, it's like not only would he have to win, but he would have to do like something super, super extra in order for that to happen. But again, like we're talking about marketing, where right now it seems like all the different touch points of what makes for like an athlete to be marketable in a sport that maybe isn't exactly consumed by a lot of people. Like that's the million-dollar question, especially in the United States. If this is Canada, it's no question. He's Connor McDavid. Like it's whatever, but
he's already in all the commercials like, up here. I'm talking about like
he is every commercial.
Yeah.
He's every commercial.
I'm talking about like
trust me. Like
yeah. Yeah. But don't you feel like coming
back?
Like
how Whitney was like, I'm every woman. He was every commercial. Yes.
Don't you feel like coming back from 3-0 kind of checks the box of like not just winning a Stanley Cup, but doing something extra? Because I get what you're saying, right? Like it takes a lot for a hockey player in this day and age to really break through. And obviously playing in Edmonton, you know, playing north of the border doesn't necessarily help his case. But I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but because, you know, 3-0 comebacks, they don't happen in the NBA. They've happened so rarely in Major League Baseball. It feels like that holds a lot of weight for an American sports audience.
It could, but so does winning. And Lewis Hamilton won, what, 7 F1 yeah. World Championships. And for the majority of his reign, it was just sort of like he was talked about, he was popular, but it wasn't like you were frequently seeing him on commercials. So whereas if even now with like Max Verstappen, where it's like we're getting more exposure to those two, it still just seems like in order for a sport where the best player isn't necessarily born in America or plays for an American-based team where there's a lot of attention, it's like, well, what does that sort of look like? Because, again, you even think about someone like Kevin Durant, where, like, when Kevin Durant played for the Oklahoma City Thunder, he was visible. But when he went to the Golden State Warriors, he's doing Google commercials. And not just one, but a couple. And he is more visible. And it's wild because you think about what the narrative was about the Warriors 15, 20 years ago. It was, oh, well, you know, they're a small market, blah, blah, blah. They're the Bay Area. There's nothing small market about the Bay Area. It's the Bay Area. But they start winning, and suddenly they are everywhere. And a lot of it is because of, A, how generational that team was, but, B, look at the market that they were in. So, again, it just seems like there's a lot of different variables to consider. Like, his profile will grow, but to the point of, like, will we start seeing Connor McDavid frequently in American commercials? It's hard to say, because even when Nathan MacKinnon won a Stanley Cup, you saw him in an American Home Family Insurance commercial, but it wasn't like you're seeing Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar everywhere outside of the NHL. And that's the big question is, you're going to see them a lot during NHL broadcasts.
Right.
Like if you're watching an NFL Sunday, are you going to see Connor McDavid? If you're watching the NBA, are you going to see Connor McDavid? Maybe, maybe not.
Well, either way, it's going to be fascinating theater tonight. I can't wait. I know our listeners can't either. Enjoy the game tonight, Ryan. Thank you, as always, for doing this with us.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me. Have a good one, everyone.
That is ESPN's Ryan Clark weighing in on Game 7 tonight, what it could do for Connor McDavid's profile, his legacy as well. I do think there's something telling to just the fact that, like, when we're looking for comparisons to this, we're going outside of hockey. No, because it's just such a rare situation, right? Like, you know, he's referencing Kevin Durant and Lewis Hamilton. I brought up, you know, the Virginia basketball team that lost. It's like, it's transcended just hockey. It's a sports moment overall tonight.
That's why I think if McDavid wins, I think he has a chance to enter a totally different sports conversation than any hockey player has been in a long, long time. But Clark might be right, right? Like, Ryan might be right. He might need to do something extra beyond that. You know, it might take a hockey player dating Olivia Rodrigo or something, right?
To me, I think if they win tonight, he does break through in a really meaningful way. The question is just how long does it last? Does it last beyond the next month of conversation or the next couple weeks of conversation? Does it elevate him for a span of 2, 3, 4 years? Because there's so much, as he said, there's so much to focus on in sports. The sports media diet south of the border has changed so much. I don't know if it gives him staying power, but I do think at least momentarily he breaks through in a way that, as you said, has probably been like since Mark Messier, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd have to keep doing it, but I also don't want to bet against Connor McDavid continuing to do it. You know, for example, right, it starts here, but then it's about Four Nations. Then it's about scaring the Americans as the guy they're rooting against. You know what I mean? Like, then it's like, you know, that's kind of part of it, right? It's like you are the show, you break through, you become a hit show, but then you have to keep putting on the show to really demand that attention and grow the base. So more than anything, I think it would be, and it's not a start for hardcore hockey fans, but for casual fans, I think like they've heard of McDavid. They know he's the best player. But doing something like this, I think, changes the conversation around you. Much like 2010 did for Sid.
Yeah. All right. We will take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll keep talking Game 7. Get your thoughts in on that. But we'll dive into the Canucks offseason more on the other side as well. A potentially interesting trade target who could be out there. UFA targets as well. And Drance's perfect Canucks offseason up at the Athletic. All that coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.